TJSideways.com podcast. Here is your host, TJ Buchenbarger.
Thank you, Beth. Coming to you live here from the Engine Pro Studios, just outside of Grand Rapids, Michigan. If you enjoy our podcast, make sure to rate us on Stitcher and iTunes. You can interact with the show every week via social media on Twitter at TJ Slideways, our Facebook fan page for TJSlideways.com, and via email podcast at TJSlideways.com. Later in the program on Specialty Fuels and Logistics Hotline, we're going to have Logan Shuhart in to talk about his adventures traveling the World of Outlaw Circuit for a third season. But joining us kind of in studio, but actually on the line for this show, I always like to bring this guy in about once a month to talk over things with us. Kevin from Hoseheads.com, Flyout Magazine, Kevin Oldham joining us on the line. And Kevin, welcome back to the States and the show.
Thanks for having me, TJ. Glad to be here.
Yeah, you know, you're one of the guys we love having on, and this is the perfect week because we're on the cusp of having one of our favorite races of the year, where you get to see the best of wing sprint car racing and non-wing sprint car racing with the World of Outlaws and the USAC National Sprint Car Series over at Eldora Speedway.
Yeah, I know. We were talking kind of off the air about that. This is a thing that maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, this would have never happened. You know, it's two completely different worlds, two completely different sides of fans. Even the sanctioning bodies, I don't know that they would have ever gotten along in the past with Ted Johnson and Johnny Caples running USAC. But, you know, it is the best of both worlds, as Van Halen once said in a song. And, you know, it's a thrill to be able to live in that world. I know you and I came up around the same time with racing, where sprint car racing was just sprint car racing. It wasn't wing sprint car racing. It wasn't non-wing sprint car racing. The same drivers, the same fans, you could see them at both types of races. It'd be nice to get back to that world. If not, hey, we've got this weekend at Eldora to kind of go back in time a little bit and relive those memories.
Yeah, I think we're slowly getting back there. There are some drivers that are kind of carrying the torch for actually racing both ways with and without wings during the year. It seems like a lot of the young guys have really adopted. I mean, Brian Clausen's kind of had to this year because of the Chasing 200 tour, but there's a lot of guys like Brady Bacon and other people that really, as long as it pays enough, are really willing to do this either way.
Yeah, Christopher Bell. I remember a few years ago, you had Rico Abreu running, Christopher Bell running, Brian Clausen running. They were running a lot of wing races, and I thought, could this be the next big three, you know, moving on up to the World of Outlaws and yet still maintain their ties to their traditional racing that they came up in? May not pan out to be that way. Of course, Rico and Christopher going NASCAR racing, but, you know, Brian, he is the old school racer now, and you got to love that.
Oh, it's just great to me. I mean, and this weekend's perfect for him with four races that he can hit up essentially in 2 days and right there back to back. But I agree with you. It became so specialized there for a while that it was almost like a dividing line. And, you know, you'd go to each race and just to give younger fans the perspective, man, there's no way this would have happened when we were, I don't know, 20s, 30s even, I think. And this race would not have happened because the two factions, I don't even know how to explain it, are just like two different worlds.
Yeah, it definitely grew apart there. I want to say right around the time when the Outlaws got on TV, it just became a totally different entity. And, you know, I don't know if that was for the better or for the worse, but, you know, right now I feel like things are, you know, even if you don't have Steve and Sammy out there, this is about as good as it can get for the Outlaws.
I agree, and it's really interesting to see some of the parody, which we'll talk about a little bit later in the program, that's going on. And then, you know, you thankfully have seen a race. All I've done is see it rain for the better part of the summer.
I've seen three USAC races so far. And, you know, of course, when I got back from Ireland, it was supposed to be the weekend of the Kokomo Grand Prix for USAC midgets. And that didn't happen. Nothing happened that whole weekend. And of all times, this weekend, my wife was away in North Carolina. I had a chance to go racing. Was going to go to Peavey, Missouri, of all places, for the World of Outlaws, and got rained out there and had planned on going to Kokomo on Sunday. And we got a lot of rain on Saturday, so that didn't happen either. So, you know, all told, about four or five of the races I had planned to go to had been, or, you know, they washed out. But I did get to go three times for USAC racing in Bloomington. Brian Clawson won there. Down at Hobstadt, Chase Stockin, that's his home track now. He lives in Fort Branch, Indiana, just 5 minutes away from there. So he's got the points lead now. And then I went up to Montpelier. That was the first USAC race ever up there. And Brady Bacon, the 2014 national champion, ended up winning up there. So you talked about parity in the World of Outlaws. You definitely have the parity in USAC. Of course, Brian Clawson picking up a couple wins so far. If he would be running the national points, I think the other competitors probably would be having some nightmares about right now, because I feel like it would be a double-digit season, kind of like what Robert Ballou had last year.
Yeah, it still could be. I mean, depending on rainouts and whatever else happens, we could see Clawson in enough shows that he might be able to make this thing go. So, but we're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back on the other side, we're going to talk to Logan Schuchart about his adventure on the 2016 World of Outlaw Tour. And when Kevin's on, we always try to get somebody a little bit different, you know, for me and for Kevin to talk to, and Schuchart definitely fits the bill, and we'll have some interesting discussion with him coming up. You're listening to the TJSlideways.com podcast. Stay tuned.
If you're looking to add a little edge to your racing program, repair your engine, maybe even look into a new engine, Bailey Racing Engines of Coldwater, Michigan is a fine supporter of TJSlideways.com. Visit them online at BaileyEngines.com or call them at 517-278-8488.
The Must-See Sprint Car Series is back on MAB TV. Seven races, including the Little 500. It all starts Thursday, May 12th, only on MAB TV. For more info, visit MustSeeRacing.com.
Engine Pro, the nation's leading specialty engine parts distributor, featuring name brand engine parts and custom engine kits sold by professional rebuilders. With 29 distribution centers providing engine builders and machine shops across the country with a full line of brand name internal engine components at competitive prices. Engine Pro is committed to building the success of their customers by offering competitive pricing, innovative programs, and knowledgeable sales representatives. For more information, visit our website at engineproparts.com. It pays to know a pro. Engine Pro.
All-Star Performance is a manufacturer and supplier of racing and high-performance auto parts, accessories, and specialty tools. From quarter midgets to sprint cars, All-Star Performance has all of the accessories you need. To find a dealer near you, visit allstarperformance.com.
TJ Buffenbarger here for the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville, Iowa. The Hall of Fame continues to promote the future of sprint car racing by preserving its past. The museum is located in Knoxville, Iowa, and is open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday from noon to 5 p.m. On race nights, the museum will stay open until 7 o'clock. Don't forget, race fans, one of the best ways that you can support the Hall of Fame is buying a membership. They start at just $25, and a basic membership gets you and a guest free admission to the museum and a 10% discount off in the museum store. Also, check with the Hall of Fame for suite tickets on the second and third floor for the 2013 Knoxville season. You can get information on all of this by going to SprintCarHOF.com, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame.
Glade Shock Technology is a cutting-edge shock bump stop technology company located in Northwest Ohio. Specializing in sprint car racing, new and used sales, service, and repair, Eric Slade and his crew have over 30 years' experience working with shocks, from the short tracks to the super speedways. For more information, visit SladeShockTechnology.com. Slade Shock Technology, where knowledge and experience make the difference.
Welcome back to the TJSlideways.com podcast. Joining us on the Specialty Fuels and Logistics Hotline, a driver in his third season on the World of Outlaws Tour, and I'm sure he's got some great stories about his adventure on the road. Logan Schuchart joining us on the line. Logan, thank you for joining us tonight.
Oh, yeah, thanks a lot for having me.
Hey, Logan, this is Kevin Oldham. You know, I see you're 10th in points. It's kind of about par for the course for you for what you've done the last 2 years on the Outlaw Tour. But are things any easier so far this year as far as your third year on the tour?
Well, I wouldn't say as – I mean, So, I mean, the competition's always tough. The racetracks are always different. I'd say we've got a little bit more help this year with Jake Ranzani and Joseph Cease. That, you know, they kind of take the, you know, burden off of Jacob and I and my grandpa. Kind of, we have a little bit more help on the road, and we just kind of built our team up a little bit more than what it was the first year. The first year just kind of, you know, we just kind of went with it and didn't really have everything we needed to be out there and didn't really know what all, you know, what all it was about. And, you know, the Outlaw Tour is hard, not just because of the competition or the, you know, the local tracks that you go to that has tough local competition, but just the whole tour itself and, you know, going up and down the road, it's a lot of miles and a lot of, you know, a lot of time away from home and, you know, just everything that goes into being part of the World of Outlaws. So it's not easier, but at least now we know we have a little bit of experience and we know what it's about that we can, you know, be prepared for it.
Logan, what aspect of being on the road is more difficult than what you thought it would be when you started this 3 years ago? What part of it is actually easier than you thought it would be?
You know, part of it's just being prepared when we leave from home. You know, sometimes we don't have all of what we need. You know, part of being away from your family so long and not being, you know, time at home, just going from one place to another is, you know, not really easy, but, or not being able to sleep in your own bed. But, you know, once you get used to it and you have, you know, the stuff that you need, you know, to work on the cars every day and, you know, try and, I mean, we kind of are used to what we're, doing, you kind of get in a routine and, you know, are able to take care of the cars fairly well. And this year we've had a little bit of motor problems. And lately, you know, we were eighth in points a couple weeks ago, but lately the last five or six races, I haven't even really ran from having motor trouble. But that's just stuff that goes into racing that we got to figure out and make ourselves better and fix the problem so it doesn't happen again.
Now, Logan, you know, as far as your team versus, let's say, a Donnie Schatz team, how many engines do you and Jacob carry in your trailer versus a Schatz?
I can't say how many, you know, the 15 car, how many motors they have. I would guess that one of those teams, say, in the KKM cars or one of the other ones, have at least anywhere from 5 to 7 motors in their trailer. That would be my guess. Usually they have two, you know, a motor in their spare cars up top and then probably two sitting down below and a motor in the car that they're running. But Jacob and I have a motor in each of our cars and then we have two spares in the trailer most of the time. So but actually the last, you know, we've been having a lot of trouble lately. We've really only had the motors that were in our cars. But we go to Eldora this weekend. We're going to get a spare motor, and then we just got one this week. My cousin Michael does, you know, he works really hard building motors, getting some help from Charlie Garrett and Don Ott, and he does, you know, he works really hard and he does a really good job putting our motors together. So he's going to get them fixed up for us, and I think we're, you know, once we get these little issues figured out, I think we'll be pretty fast. And you know, we started out the year pretty fast and we've just been having a little bit of issues lately. But once I feel like when it gets all starts coming together, we'll be able to run up front.
I was going to allude to that. You did have a great start to the season, both you and Jacob getting a podium finish in California. For a smaller team like you, how important is it to strike, get a good run early in the season when everything's fresh and you're on par with everyone?
At any point, just because, you know, we run off of what our cars make. I'd see, we don't have all the sponsorship money over the winter to you know, buy four cars and, you know, get four new of everything that we can just stack the trailer at the beginning of the year. You know, we have to start racing and what we win is where we get our money. And then we kind of start building in the middle of the year. Usually actually during the summer times when we, you know, when we're racing all the time is when we can, you know, start building for really the next year around Knoxville time. You know, we try to start paying our bills off and try to start building for the next year because we can't do a whole lot over the winter. So that's most of what goes into a lot of our team and just operates a little bit different than everybody else.
Yeah, definitely. You guys are on a pretty strict budget there. And I was reading an article somewhere about Bobby Allen. Of course, he is your grandfather, correct? He actually
yes.
cooks meals on the road. Is that true? And if so, what's his best meal?
Well, that's one thing we did more of, I'd say, the first year that we were out here. But this year he made actually just a couple nights ago, we cooked out with our whole team. That's a pretty cool thing, even though, some of like Jake Granzani and Joe Cease, they're buddies of mine now, but like a year or two ago, I didn't even know them. They're just race fans or like racing, and we got them to come along with us. Now we're we can hang out after the races, and I'd say they're some of my best friends. So, but we had a little cookout the other night. My grandpa made some tilapia and asparagus and some rice, so it was good. He likes to cook. It's one of those little things that he got into. I think when he wasn't racing, once he kind of retired and stopped racing, he got bored and he got into cooking. So,
He'd probably have the healthy food, given that he grew up down there in Miami and so forth. So fish, that would have been my guess for him.
the whole Allen side likes the whole health food thing, so they're pretty good at that.
That's all right. Pretty good. Logan Schuhart joining us on the line, and Logan, doing the tour and everything, what's been probably the most memorable experience? It might not even be on the racetrack for you since you set out on the road 3 years ago.
My most memorable experience, I'd say just, driving up and down the road with my grandfather and being able to spend that time with him and racing with him. Growing up, he was a hero of mine, a mentor of mine, and, just showed me what it was, what racing was all about. And to be able to, this is something I've dreamt about since I was a little kid, and, to know whether I was even going to get a shot to be able to do this was, I never knew. So, since the first year and to be out here for the third year in a row and to be able to do it with my grandfather and, Jacob and my buddies, it's just, we are at a disadvantage lots of times, but I wouldn't want to trade it. I want to have a couple really good years with my grandpa and, be able to win races with him. I know that's, something I'll never forget for the rest of my life. So, that means more to me than anything is to be able to travel with my family and make those memories, just the simple ones driving down the road with my grandfather and my family.
So, TJ alluded to the fact that you almost got a win out there in Watsonville. You led 21 out of 35 laps out there. What's it going to take, in your opinion, to break through and get that first outlaw win?
I think nights where we can put a whole night together where we don't have issues. Like I said, we've been having issues with motors and stuff like that. But when we don't have issues and we can kind of focus just on the setup of the race car, because that's what the World Outlaws are about. These guys are so good every time they hit the racetrack that you have to be on top of everything. The track conditions, the setup of the race car, the driver's got to make the right decisions at the right time. So you cannot make any mistakes. And when you have those little issues, it's just going to throw you back throughout the night. And when we don't have those issues, we seem to be, fairly fast, qualify good, run up front in the heat race. And that's just what Watsonville is about. Jacob and I both seemed to not have any problems that night. And, we both hit the racetrack, qualified good, ran, up front in our heat races. And just, we started up front too. I wouldn't say I was as good as I would like to be that night. I didn't feel very good in the feature, say halfway through, I was a little, looser than what I wanted to be. But I'd say, if we can keep having nights where we don't have issues and we can keep focused on the cars and, how to make ourselves better, I think we're going to keep finishing up front. You keep being consistent, eventually they're going to turn into wins.
Well, Logan, I'm sure you have some people to thank that keep you guys on the road as well.
Of course. Marty Thompson Investments, a friend of my grandpa, has been around for a very long time. And big help to us. Gardner Construction, Newman's Towing, CMB Mushroom Farms, Factory Cane Shock, DMI, Triple X Race Company, all big sponsors of ours, JRC Trucking, and Richfield Custom Pole Buildings, Speedway 94. A lot of help from a lot of different people.
We'll throw Mark Pell in there, too, because he's right down the road. So Pell's Tire Service.
That's right. I was just going to say that.
The only reason I threw it in is because literally I would hear about it because I'm up with him up here in Michigan, so I'd probably hear about it if I didn't say it. So, well, Logan, thank you for taking time out to join us. Best of luck on the road, and look forward to seeing you later in the season.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right, Logan Shewhart, we're going to take a commercial break, but when we come back, we're going to have more discussion about the big weekend at Eldora Speedway. You're listening to the TJSlideways.com podcast.
If you're looking to add a little edge to your racing program, repair your engine, maybe even look into a new engine, Bailey Racing Engines of Coldwater, Michigan is a fine supporter of TJSlideways.com. Visit them online at BaileyEngines.com or call them at 517-278-8488.
The Must-See Sprint Car Series is back on MAB TV. Seven races, including the Little 500. It all starts Thursday, May 12th, only on MAB TV. For more info, visit MustSeeRacing.com.
Engine Pro, the nation's leading specialty engine parts distributor, featuring name brand engine parts and custom engine kits sold by professional rebuilders. With 29 distribution centers providing engine builders and machine shops across the country with a full line of brand name internal engine components at competitive prices. Engine Pro is committed to building the success of their customers by offering competitive pricing, innovative programs, and knowledgeable sales representatives. For more information, visit our website at engineproparts.com. It pays to know a pro. Engine Pro.
All-Star Performance is a manufacturer and supplier of racing and high-performance auto parts, accessories, and specialty tools. From quarter midgets to sprint cars, All-Star Performance has all of the accessories you need. To find a dealer near you, visit allstarperformance.com.
TJ Buffenbarger here for the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville, Iowa. The Hall of Fame continues to promote the future of sprint car racing by preserving its past. The museum is located in Knoxville, Iowa, and is open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday from noon to 5 p.m. On race nights, the museum will stay open until 7 o'clock. Don't forget, race fans, one of the best ways that you can support the Hall of Fame is buying a membership. They start at just $25, and a basic membership gets you and a guest free admission to the museum and a 10% discount off in the museum store. Also, check with the Hall of Fame for suite tickets on the second and third floor for the 2013 Knoxville season. You can get information on all of this by going to SprintCarHOF.com, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame.
Blade Shock Technology is a cutting-edge shock bump stop technology company located in Northwest Ohio. Specializing in sprint car racing, new and used sales, service, and repair, Eric Slade and his crew have over 30 years' experience working with shocks, from the short tracks to the super speedways. For more information, visit SladeShockTechnology.com. Slade Shock Technology, where knowledge and experience make the difference.
Welcome back to the TJSlideways.com podcast. Maxim Racing Chassis would like to congratulate the following winners who picked up feature victories recently in Maxim Chassis: Jason Sides, Brady Short, John Ivey, Davey Franick, don't panic at all, Cody Swanson, Josh Moffat, and Joey Montgomery. For more information, visit their website, racemaxims.com. Kevin Oldham still here on the line with me as we look forward to Let's Race 2 weekend at Eldora Speedway with the Craftsman World of Outlaw Sprint Car Series. Still getting used to getting that Craftsman in there. And also the AMSOIL USAC National Sprint Car Series. And Kevin, like I said, we were talking earlier about how this is one of our favorite weekends, being able to get both divisions in there. So let's start talking on the USAC side of things first. Coming off of a season where Robert Ballew was pretty dominant the whole year, this year the wealth has been spread around a little bit on the tour.
Yeah, sure has. You know, I mentioned earlier Brian Clausen picked up a couple wins, one down there in Ocala and then also at Bloomington. But, you know, he had Robert Ballew winning down in Florida, Thomas Meserol, the winner of the Four Crown Nationals last year. He also won down there in Florida. And you had Dave Darland picking up a win at Lawrenceburg, Chase Stockin at Hobstadt, and Brady Bacon at Montpelier. But you know, you mentioned Ballou winning so many times last year, nearly set a record for number of wins. I think he got up to 13 there, at least with USAC. But his season this year, at least in Indiana, when I've seen him, he's had some issues, not necessarily with engines or anything, but with just things not working right in the handling department. I believe down there at Hobstadt, he qualified 16th, I want to say, and wasn't happy with the car, so switched to a backup car, which that's an interesting new rule for USAC, where you can switch cars, but you're only penalized to go to the back for one race. So if you switch to a backup in your heat race, and let's say you did not make the transfer in the heat, and one would normally expect, hey, you're going to have to start in the back of the B, well, you actually get your time back for the B. So you're only having a one-race penalty. So anyway, it didn't quite work out for him down there at Hobstadt necessarily, although I want to say he was maybe hard charger down there, but still just hasn't been his season so far. But who knows? He is so good at Eldora. He's got four wins over there, at least in USAC. And I would expect if there's any place to get him back on track, it's going to be there at Eldora.
Yeah, the other guy I kind of look forward to have a big weekend. The two I think particularly is, of course, Dave Darwin. Anytime we go to Eldora and we're talking USAC, yeah, Dave Darwin's one of the people we have to talk to. But Brady Bacon too, because the Hoffman car always goes so good at Eldora, and that's one of the places where the Hoffman crew expects their driver to be able to perform. And Brady's gotten a lot better there, and I think they could be the two of the people we really need to watch this weekend.
I would definitely agree with that. I was just looking back through the records on the Eldora Speedway website, and at least by my calculations, the Hoffmans have won 9 sprint car races at Eldora. You know, you go back to Robbie Stanley, that was surprisingly their first win there in 1993, and Dave Darlin picking up wins in 98 and 99. Then you had the Jerry Coons and Tracy Hines era. Coons won once in 06, Hines won once in 06, Coons won a couple times in 09, then Kyle Larson in 11, and Brady Bacon in the Four Crown in 14. So, yeah, they've always got a stout piece there. And any track that even resembles Eldora with the banking and so forth and a high-horsepower track like Lawrenceburg, they go well on those types of tracks. They go well most places, but especially a place like Eldora, you can definitely count on them. And, of course, Dave Darlin, at least from active USAC sprint car drivers, he leads the way with 5 wins. Tracy Hines, now pretty much retired, had 9 wins. Jack Hewitt, of course, long retired, had 13. So, you know, the last time Darlin had picked up a win there at Eldora, I believe it was with Jeff Walker back in 2012. Came close with Steve and Carla Phillips' car, but never quite was there. Yeah, I look for big things from Darlin this weekend at Eldora. I'd like to see him get the monkey off of his back, but you know, you got plenty of guys that are just itching to get that first feature win.
Yeah, I'm looking just at the top 10 in points. I see at least 5 drivers that would be easily feature favorites if they are anywhere near the front, like guys like Timas, and even Stockton really has gone pretty well there. I wouldn't surprise me to see him up front, and CJ Leary as well. He goes really good at Eldora. So there's a lot of guys that, you know, where in the past you might have had 1 or 2 or 3 people that really go good at Eldora. Really, everyone in the top 10 is pretty decent there.
Yeah, Chase Stockton is one of the best qualifiers in the top 10 in points there, and the qualifying is definitely key at Eldora. I'd look for him, that's definitely not a dark horse by any means for Chase Stockton to pick up a win at Eldora. I think it's only a matter of time coming. And then, of course, last year, C.J. Leary came within a lap this particular weekend of getting that first USAC National Sprint Car win. Of course, he won the Sumar Classic earlier in April for Silver Crown cars, but being teamed up with Mike Dutcher, you know he's going to have the car over there to get it done.
Yeah, Leary's a kid that, you know, he got some good laps when Boss was there and won a feature, and that's like when he figured it out. He got to kind of go out there for that Boss show in October, and it seems like he figured out a lot of stuff. It's a place where if you don't have a lot of laps, especially in a non-wing car, it's really tricky. And I don't know what it was, but you could literally, like, see the light bulb go on that night, and that kid finally figured it out.
Yeah, it's definitely a place that you either love it or you hate it. I don't know that there's really any in between there. And there are a few tracks on the tour that are like that. Hobstad is kind of another place like that. I alluded to that in my latest article on Hoseheads, where you've got maybe a handful of guys that you can count on running up front, and the rest of them, well, you know, they're just going to be top 10 at best. But I would definitely say Leary and Stockton, look for big things there. Bacon, you know, he's going to be tough. Darling's going to be tough. Ballou's going to be tough. Mesrall, he's not afraid of the wall. So
no.
He threw that last year. But interestingly enough, you know, Brian Clausen, he has yet to pick up a USAC sprint car win there at Eldora. And, you know, from what I've seen so far this year from running the wing, he just seems to be better without the wing.
Well, we've seen that a lot, too, though. A lot of guys that get in a wing sprint car pick up speed because they're used to everything moving so fast. You know, once they get in the non-wing car, it's one common thread I talk to these guys. When I talk to them, it's like, well, it feels like it slows down a little bit now. I'm in the non-wing car. But I know for a fact Clausen really wants a non-wing win at Eldora so badly in a sprint car.
He had the fastest car at the Four Crown last year, and unfortunately he kind of threw it away, got into the wall. But that team that he's with now, I think that was their first race at the Four Crown last year, but they've won 5 out of 11 national sprint car races with USAC since that formed up. So, you know, they're definitely on a roll. It'll be interesting to see if he gets his monkey off the back.
You know, one thing interesting, too, with Clausen as a side note, he's in the middle of the chase for 200 races, and it wears me out even thinking just going to 200 races, yeah. Let alone driving in them. You know, you wonder how it's going to start wearing on him. You know, you wouldn't think Indianapolis would be a break, but actually a couple weeks in Indy, he's actually, his schedule driving-wise slows down a little bit as far as number of races goes. But once he leaves the 500, you almost wonder, you know, how the stamina and everything's going to be for him, you know, going into those 200 races. I mean, a lot of guys' tongue hit the ground about 120.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most I've ever been to was 83, and that was just flat out, you know. It just seems like I was going to races all the time. But, you know, the logistics side of it, that wears you out as much as anything, I think. At least for me, driving back and forth during Indiana Sprint Week, it's that windshield time. If you're having to drive, even riding in the car, that tends to wear on you a little bit too, so... you're right. I mean, I think it will be interesting to see, you know, how the performance fares, you know, by about the time Knoxville rolls around. But still, you know, he's had a great year so far, and, you know, he's looked good out there at Knoxville. And, you know, he was quick time at the Kings Royal, too, last year. So it'll be interesting to see what he does with the wing at Eldora.
Yeah, it seems like that's the place that he's done pretty well with the wing. I think he would have been off to an even better start that weekend. The left rear tire hadn't blown on the car going into it. And it was just, it's been amazing kind of to see his transformation. He's taken to it really well. And even when we talk to him now, it seems like he says, oh, I'm still figuring it out. I'm still figuring it out. Well, to me, he's still looking pretty good for a kid that's just figuring out the wing sprint car side of things.
Yeah, I would agree. And, you know, he's been a fast learner in every single thing that he's ever been in. I mean, the first time he ever ran Winchester, he wins 2 features, you know, and that's not a place for the faint of heart by any means. So doesn't surprise me any. I guess what really surprises me, you know, is that he's not looked at by anybody in these upper echelons other than at Indy. I mean, if I were a NASCAR owner, I'd be like, I think we need to give that guy another shot again. I mean, I recall Tony Stewart getting his first real break when he was 25 years old. And, you know, by today's day and age, hey, that's old. But, you know, that I think that's the part that surprises me as much as anything is that, hey, we know he's adaptable. We know he's got talent. He's already done things down there, down south. I don't understand why, unless it's just a money thing, why he's not getting looked at. So, but nevertheless, I enjoy having him. I enjoy watching him. It's definitely, you know, when you've got the cream of the crop to try and beat, you know, it makes it that much better, I would say, if you're a competitor, to beat a guy like Clausen than to say, okay, well, he's off racing NASCAR, now it's my time. I think these guys would like to beat him.
I think so, too. I think he's becoming one of the yardsticks a lot of the other people are shooting for. Now, on the World of Outlaw side of things, I look at the point standings, and it's a name other than Donnie Schatz. Now, that's not totally unusual this time of year. Sometimes in years past, on last year was just something for the ages. But, you know, Schatz usually starts out a little sore. But Brad Sweet is really out of the gate. Talk about a guy that's done some non-wing and some wing racing. The kid that slept on couches all over Indianapolis when he first got here is now leading the World of Outlaws point standings.
Yeah, I mean, definitely has been a transformation. I would say the biggest change, you know, it may have been right around Knoxville time last year. What didn't they bring on Lee Stauffer from Pennsylvania as crew chief? And seems to me that's been the big change, at least for him, confidence wise, because you know, he's winning races like crazy, five of them. Of course, Schatz has got five wins, but I honestly would have never thought Brad Sweet would be leading points. You know, I figured it'd be a Donnie Schatz show, and but it's a pleasant surprise to see some new names up there. You know, I don't know if it'll last necessarily, but hey, you know, they've shown that they've had the consistency so far. 17 top fives, and you know, Schatz has only got 13 top fives. They both have five wins, so. Look, you know, Sweet is looking good. You know, Eldora, he's won the King's Royal there before, so he knows how to run that track. I wouldn't expect him to run poorly at Eldora, so looking forward to seeing how well he does, though. But Shane Stewart, second in points, it's really been kind of a quiet year for him.
Now, relatively. I mean, he's been hanging around. I mean, he still has 12 top fives. It's not like he's been, you know, riding around in the middle of the pack somewhere. I think it's just right. KKR's fast start, because even though Pittman's fifth in points, he has three wins, and he kind of got off to a quick start, and Schatz was winning a little bit at that point. So he had Sweet, Schatz, and Pittman all kind of fighting it out there, and Shane's now just starting to come on, though.
Yeah, definitely. And, of course, winning the big race down there at Devil's Bowl, a huge confidence booster for him. And, you know, last year, what he picked up or he swept the King's Royal weekend. So, you know, he's no slouch at the Big E either. How about fourth, Joey Saldana or Saldana? I always say Saldana. That's how I always heard it. But, you know, I know Johnny Gibson will say Saldana with the Beef Packers car, a car that he formerly ran, I want to say, back about 1996 when he first started running with the Outlaws.
I think this is actually, I guess, third stint in it, actually. And, the neat thing to me about the Saldana Roth combination is they are the one team in the top five that doesn't have a NASCAR driver affiliation with them. And I think that's important because, you know, it's great what those guys do for the sport. And I think it's awesome that they get back and they have race teams and stuff. But I think it's important to see a couple of these other teams running up alongside them so it doesn't look like you have to have that kind of backing to be successful.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely want to have more cars out on the road. You know, Dennis Roth has been doing it for a long time, and he's been on the road, off the road. But, yeah, you definitely want to have some more quality car owners out there so that these guys can have rides. And you know, yeah, you definitely don't want to scare off the next team owner wanting to come in there. But, you know, Saldana, definitely, I don't know if there's anyone that's won more outlaw races in the last decade there at the Big E. And I would expect him to be fast as well there. Looking down the list, David Gravel in sixth. I know one time I was on the show, maybe it was 2 years ago, he picked up his first outlaw win there.
Yeah, and he's a kid that can kind of jump out and surprise you a little bit at times. And one thing I love about watching Gravels on restarts, man, he just eats people up on restarts to no end, just chews them up, especially since they went to the double file restarts. That's something that, you know, when you watch him, it's fun to watch him just pick off cars.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. So how about some long shots there at Eldora? I know we always kind of talk about that. I know in the past I said, hey, Randy Hannigan, you can't really call Dale Blaney a long shot.
I know. That's the first name that came to mind, too. I don't know why. Hey, I wonder what Blaney could do. But here's one for you that's not really a long shot because he's won an outlaw show there, but he's been running the outlaw tour this year, 11th in points, Greg Wilson. Now, he just picked up a win Friday night at Jacksonville, went to the local show after they got rained out with the Outlaws. But I think sometimes those guys have to do that kind of stuff. It's good for him to get their confidence back to maybe take a step to a weekly show or a different or a regional show, it kind of shows them how, you know, after getting your butt kicked out there a little bit while you're learning, that you really have learned something and improved.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, of course, Wilson picking up the win there at during the Four Crown weekend last year at Eldora, you know, that had to be the one thing to tell him, hey, I'm capable of running with the Outlaws. And, of course, you know, he's won, I want to say, some all-star titles back there in the late 90s, early 2000s, maybe at least one. But, you know, he's got a ton of laps there. And now that that racetrack has changed quite a bit, I mean, he won that race on the bottom on that Friday night of the Four Crown weekend. You know, everybody knows how to run the top there, but if there's one guy that knows how to run the bottom and fast, it's Wilson.
Yeah, and what's funny is, it's a really funny story about Wilson's victory at the Four Crown. I wasn't able to go. I had work stuff that weekend, so we sent the retired guy. Dad went down there to Bob, went down there to cover everything for us. And he calls me and goes, he gave me someone else as the winner, and I'm telling you, no, Greg Wilson won the race. He didn't realize that Greg Wilson won the race. So
wow.
I go to bed thinking, geez, how could he not figure out who won the race? I woke up to at least five messages from other people that did the exact same thing.
Even expecting it.
Yeah.
It was just a white car. Or, you know, somebody winning the race on the bottom of Eldora in an Outlaw show, hey, I guess stranger things have happened.
And the way he does it isn't like unspectacular or anything. To me, it's amazing to watch him do what he does on the bottom there, because no one else quite does that the same way Greg does.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a certain talent to be able to do that sort of thing and keep the speed and not kill the momentum. Eldora is all about momentum.
Yeah, and you know, it'll be interesting to see who shows up this weekend. That could do a little bit with our dark horse picks, too, because I haven't seen a lot of chatter about who outside the Outlaws might be showing up this weekend, too, because the Dirt Classic's going on at I-80 Speedway on Friday night for the NSL, so that kind of takes them out of play. And
okay.
The All-Stars are off. The Fremont Attica area is off. But it'll be interesting to see who shows up, because quite often you'll see a team or two that might be looking at doing a Kings Royal run or something, so they'll go there to get a feel for it. So, but I haven't heard a lot of chatter about who might show up, but that's kind of I'm almost kind of excited about that, because sometimes in this day and era age, I hate to put on my get off my lawn, you know, hat here a little bit, old guy,
yeah.
but
come on out.
Yeah. The water's nice, right? The mystery of who might show up sometimes is ruined a bit with social media. It's one thing I don't like about it, and I'm a big social media proponent, but one thing I do is kind of see guys are coming. It's a different kind of excitement. You see it early in the week, oh, this person's going to be there. But I kind of like the mystery of going up there and like, all right, who's going to show up at this deal?
That was definitely one of the cool things about going to races as a kid. You just didn't know who was going to be there. And I can remember distinctly being excited to see somebody from Pennsylvania there at Eldora running one of those races. But back then, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, used to be a ton of races leading up to the Kings Royal. I mean, they would run the All-Stars at least twice a month there, I want to say in like April and May. And now pretty much you've got this Outlaw show, this two-day show in May, and then you've got the one Ohio Speed Week show in June, and then that's it. So, yeah. Hey, if you want to come out, you want to get laps, this is the time.
Yeah, and you don't have many chances. If you're not used to being there, you should at least get on it once, I think, because generally don't see anyone go in there and just really take to it visiting the first time. And few people have done it, and they've been spectacular at it, but they're also very exceptional drivers that have done it. So but this is just such a fun opportunity. Though there's no support divisions, two of the best classes of sprint cars in the world at the same venue, and it still blows my mind that Roger Slack and everyone over there at Eldora and all the officials with the Outlaws and USAC in the first year of this too, everyone worked together really well too. I was actually around the control tower area a little bit and saw got to hear some of the officials conversing, some of the activity in the pit area, and even after it rained, trying to get the racetrack run in at one point. I mean, it was just neat to see everyone kind of rowing the boat in the same direction.
Yeah, it definitely bodes well for the future of sprint car racing when you can have really the two biggest divisions, or at least arguably the two biggest working together. And that's the whole thing. I mean, it's sprint car racing, short track dirt sprint car racing. I mean, it's still a niche, but, you know, we want it to survive because, hey, you know, I know you feel like I do. If we're stuck watching racing like we saw on the TV yesterday, forget it. I'll just take up a new hobby.
yeah, that we could do a whole different show about that, but I wouldn't be able to talk about it. I am watching. So that's a blog coming later this week, how I got parts of my life back by there's three things that I did, and one of them is I quit watching the races on Sunday and looking at the box score. And I also quit watching all the pregame shows to every sporting event I wanted to, because I wasn't really learning that much anyway. And third one is I live on anything on demand. I just don't get, you know, pretty much watch everything whenever I can digest it. Hence why this show is a podcast and not live. So,
So anyway, as long as we can keep any kind of sprint car racing going, you know, the future is bright, at least in my mind. I mean, I have hope.
Yeah, and it's just so neat to see everyone working together on this deal, because like we've reiterated a couple times in the podcast, 80s, no way this would have happened. 90s, even more of a no way this would have happened.
And even
5 years ago, if someone would have suggested that this would happen at Eldora, I thought it was amazing when they got on the same weekend at the Four Crown. That, to me, was almost, you know, unheard of.
I don't want to say sacrilege, but I mean, you think about the fans. I mean, they're pretty divided. I would say probably more the wingless guys are divided.
They're divided by about 30 years.
Yeah.
So there's a famous saying about the World of Outlaws: the young fans go to watch old guys go fast, and the USAC, the old guys come to watch kids go fast. So
they get
all mixed together this weekend at Eldora Speedway. Well, Kevin, I really appreciate you joining us tonight. We killed an hour. I always joke, oh man, when Kevin's here. This time I was smart enough to only book one guest because I knew we'd probably fill the hour.
Yeah, it's easy to talk about something that you're passionate about, and this is the number one thing. And it doesn't matter what type of sprint car racing, but at least sprint car racing in Eldora doesn't get more pure than that to me. That is where I really fell in love with the sport. So you talk about anything combining that venue and this type of racing, and you know, it could be days that I would be talking about it, and people would probably get bored and want to tune out. But still. Looking forward to it.
And let's talk a minute about your work, because we had you on here. Definitely want to do that. The Phil Poor story. If you have not gone to hoseheads.com and read this book yet, I call it a book. It's a column, but it's, you know, I won't print it because I'm afraid of how many pages it'll actually take. I read it on monitor, but that story is absolutely amazing. If you have not read Kevin's long format interviews, they are my favorite motorsports reading, hands down. They are my favorite pieces to read. I'm completely serious. I remember emailing you that one day, telling you after you posted the one about Phil Poor, thank you for killing the rest of my day, because you pretty much did. Your productivity was gone.
It was literally a 6-month project for me just to try and, one, do all the research and go back into the archives to figure out questions. But it was about a 5-hour process, five and a half hours on a Sunday afternoon after the Chili Bowl, that we sat down and did it pretty much straight through. So, my hat's off to Phil for remembering as much as he did, but also having the patience to sit through all those questions.
There's a lot. I think Alan still has all the other long format ones linked as well. So if you want to read those, go over to hoseheads.com/ko.html. I actually have the URL memorized. And you can go in there and you can check out all the long format interviews and also a new piece that you just put up today as well.
Yeah. Actually, I think it went up over the weekend, but I just kind of promoted it today. I guess you kind of have to do that to let people know, hey, the stuff's out there. You know, I spent some time on it, have at it, and kind of read it. But, you know, a lot of people have asked me, hey, how do you choose who do you do these long articles on? And for me, it all goes back to the beginning days of when I was just a fan and wanting to learn more and never finding out that information. These were things, you know, and people that – that I just wanted to ask questions of that were really influential, and that's how I got Phil Porter to do that. I just wanted to find out more about that era, and it really was that time when I really fell in love with the sport.
Yeah, and it's an amazing piece. So if you go over to hosteds.com, our good friend over there, Alan Holland, you'll be able to read that as well. Well, Kevin, the best part is we'll probably be able to see each other. Of course, I've had this dark Charlie Brown cloud that rains following me around. Hopefully that goes away for the weekend. We're able to visit and see some good racing this weekend.
Looking forward to it, and hope to see you down there in the pit area at least on Saturday.
Definitely. So that's going to wrap up this edition of the TJSlideways.com podcast. Of course, I want to thank Kevin Oldham for being on tonight. Also, Logan Schuhart for calling in. And hey, everybody, let's go race two this weekend at Eldora. Thank you, and good night.
Thank you for listening to the TJ Slideways podcast.